Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
And live, like the Dodo, it's Football Weekly Extra. And on today's mop-up of the endless flood of football, we ask, time added on, does Sir Alex really get more extra seconds than Phil Jupitus at the Times canteen? The Carling Cup, are Portsmouth salvable after all? Elsewhere, Sol Campbell's in the soup, and will QPR lose Flavio Briatore? Plus, we look forward to this weekend's big matches, Fulham Arsenal and Man United's visit to Stoke. Abroad, there's Spanish news with, oh look, Barca and Real in another two-horse race, but Almeria leading the sexual pulsation index, a doctor explains. And in Italy, why fans don't want Totti's old shirt, and what next for a Milan team as lacking in width and creativity as Misha Barton. All that, plus Post and Barry Glendening's holiday stories in Football Weekly Extra. Producer Pete's rolling on this recorded Football Weekly Extra, and here in front of me I have John Ashdown.
Hi, James. The Tony Hibbert of Football Weekly, according to one post last week.
Yeah, but what the Italians would call the hair in the egg, because otherwise there's a lot of love for you out there in listener land.
That's the only reason I said it.
Paul Doyle, an equally popular figure.
Hi, James.
Hi, Paul. And Barry Glendening.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. I don't need to tell you how much you mean and how much your return now means to our listeners. They're very excited, Barry.
There's a lot of pressure on me.
There's a lot of pressure.
I've been on my holidays, but I was reading the
Where'd
course
you go, Barry?
I'll give you a clue.
It's a recording of Specials Stereotype?
No.
No, okay.
I was in Seville. Granada and Seville.
Right.
And when I was in Seville, I saw possibly the funniest thing I've ever seen. You know, you see people sitting around doing comedy by committee and comedians slaving over trying to chip gags out of granite. But all you have to do is go to Seville, and I was sitting at a curbside restaurant near some orange trees, and a diner at the next table was just eating his dinner, and an orange fell out of a tree and landed square on his head, causing him to jump up in the air and throw dishes and cutlery everywhere. It was quite amusing. I've managed to make it sound not at all amusing in the telling.
Right.
But yeah.
So you're confident that's the funniest thing you've ever seen?
Yeah.
Okay.
You had to be there.
Ah, lovely. Okay, but you had a nice time in Seville. Wonderful city.
I did, yeah. Mm. Sevilla were playing the Romanian team managed by Fox Mulder.
He's not that similar. I appreciated your post. And in fact, your continued involvement on the message boards. Do go on with your story.
Well, I did think I should dive in. And I thought poor old Simon Hattonston got a terrible time. Some of our listeners are complete bastards. I listened to that pod. I was expecting a complete car crash, and I thought it was very funny.
Right, you were expecting a Flavio Briatore produced pod.
Yeah. Well, not a deliberate car crash, but
might be topical, that. Anyway, sorry, yes?
So I didn't go to that game because I was feeling poorly that night, and I went to the Bullring instead, though, the next day, and that was good fun.
The Toreador Arena, not the shopping centre, clearly.
Yeah.
And you also, on your travels, for want of anything better to do, try listening to our live pod experiment.
Well, no, I was back.
Oh, were you back?
Yes.
Thanks for turning up for that, Barry.
Yeah, so I was still technically on holidays.
Right,
so,
okay.
Yeah, but it just sounded like you were all underwater.
Right.
Were you all underwater?
No, strangely. No. No, but there you go. Many, many thanks to the, I think, were we up to 4.5 people who actually did catch some of that? I believe that at least two others tried but weren't able to make the technology work for them and had to catch it recorded afterwards.
But I should add that listening to Jonathan Wilson's nerdy tactical discussions with an underwater effect, they're just as incomprehensible as they are in real time.
Right. Okay. Now, producer Pete's pointing at the clock in a kind of Mark Hughes fashion. Not quite sure what he means, but it might be the fact that we haven't actually touched on the subject of football yet. And who can blame us when all we've got to talk about from midweek is the Carling Cup? Now, there are one or two kind of topical elements of interest here, because this is a tournament that I still fail to understand the point of, John Ashton. I don't know if you could summarise it for me.
Well, isn't it a chance for teams to play their youth players and beat smaller teams? It is a boring competition generally, isn't it?
Well, as Barry points out, in a sport where managers and clubs are always talking about fixture congestion, here's a good way for us to just ease the whole thing. Drop the Carling Cup, drop it now.
Well, like La Liga and Serie A had full cards of games during the week, which I presume we'll be talking about later.
Oh, yeah.
So the Premier League could have had a card of games last night, or they could have had no games at all and just had a break. Because if teams, like say Manchester United played Wolves last night, Manchester United put out a second team, still won with 10 men, and Wolves put out a team that they didn't play their main two strikers, Andy Keogh and Kevin Doyle. So you have to wonder, what is the point of it all?
It was still an interesting enough game.
The Man United one?
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of talking points, seeing as how that's what we're here to do. Can I talk about some of them?
If you must, go on. What have you got for us?
Well, Fabio was sent off. I don't know if you saw that.
No.
Well, Michael Keightley, a young lad who obviously worked his way up from non-league football and is just coming back from a bad injury, playing on the biggest stage that he's played so far in his career, was just hacked down as he was about to go through and score a goal by Fabio, who was deservedly sent off. And the Man United fans applauded the perpetrator of that sinister act, which I thought was quite shameful. Also, I think that did highlight the need for a rule change as well. I think because although the ref couldn't give a penalty, obviously, because it was outside the box, but I think the rules should be amended so that he can give a penalty in that situation, because Fabio timed his foul so that it was outside the box. So right. United had time to bring their whole team back and make a nice big wall. And a clear goal-scoring opportunity was nullified.
It's interesting. So
crime paid.
Should we file that with reduced to 10 goalkeepers men, can't so use their hands?
Crime didn't pay.
Well, it did pay. I mean, they were reduced to 10 men, but which was right. But they should have been reduced to 10 men and been a goal down.
Right. Manchester United, of course, were playing that game only about 15 minutes after finishing off their derby with City, thanks to all the time that was added on at the end. All sorts of controversy about this and people posting in on various message boards and articles.
I'm against people complaining about there being too much time in football matches because, as you know, I think we're swindled out of a lot of playing time as it is.
So that's matches, a fair point.
Matches should be a lot longer than
it's
they
just
are.
Whether it... Whether it's very selective when the time is added on, I think, is the issue.
Well, I noticed that Manchester City scored their winner in the 111th minute last night, and we didn't hear them complaining about that. So,
Yes. Okay. Monctonian, because I mentioned this, Monctonian posting and saying about this business of the 30 seconds for a substitution, i.e. a referee will add 30 seconds on when a substitution is made, which is something that I heard you talking about earlier, Paul. I don't know if you ever came up with an answer for this, whether it is actually an official or unwritten law in the kind of...
Well, it's not an official law. It's not in the rules of the game.
Right.
But sometimes independent associations give directives to the referees on how to interpret certain laws.
It would seem nonsensical to have an automatic 30-second add-on, because substitutions, if tactical substitutions, managers will send players to the far side of a pitch and will walk slowly across, and it can take up to a minute. Right. Whereas some substitutions are quickly on and off, take 5 seconds.
Yeah. Right.
So. And is there a guideline for how many seconds you add on for goals being scored and things like that? Because that was Saturday's or Sunday's
contentious
issue.
Right, okay. Well, anyway, on the weekend,
One thing probably worth touching on, Danny Taylor wrote an article in, I think, Monday's Guardian, and he'd studied up his stats and suggested that Manchester United get more injury time, or there's more injury time in Old Trafford when Manchester United are losing.
About a minute more on average.
Than there is when they're winning. But, as many of our readers have pointed out, the reason for that could well be that if Manchester United aren't winning, that means the other team is either drawing or winning, so they're wasting time, therefore more time is going to be added.
Well, let's just move on.
In relation to that stat, what's interesting, at least I think it's interesting, is that the team that's involved in matches with the most amount of added time is Stoke, which suggests that referees are stopping the clock for set pieces because, winding up those long throws takes seconds.
That's really interesting because, of course, Stoke host Manchester United this very weekend. Assuming they can fit a big enough clock in at the Britannia in time.
Well, there's another issue there, actually, that needs to be raised,
right.
I think.
Okay.
Ryan Shawcross, of whom I'm a big fan, I think he's a great player, and his centre-back partnership with Abdoulaye Faye is formidable. But he's got this problem at the moment. He's training very rarely because he's got some form of tendonitis. He's actually, which has been described as growing pains. He's grown by 2 inches in the last year, bizarrely.
I mean, how old is he?
He's 21. I mean, I don't know what age you stopped growing at, James, but
he hasn't stopped growing.
But I thought that 21 was quite late to be growing. He's now 6'5". But So he's been taking these some kind of an injection before games to allow him to play. Now, I don't know, I'm not a doctor and I don't know, and I haven't examined him.
Right.
But the whole issue of giving people painkilling injections in order to play matches, is that not performance enhancement? I mean, it's short-term game that could cause long-term damage.
Well, no, I think that's an established precedent for giving
people... It is established precedent, but that doesn't make it right, does it? Well, there's lots of old players
who say... You could say that training during the week is performance enhancing then, but you wouldn't...
Well, no, because this is... lots of ex-players say that taking injections to get them through a match as a painkiller has caused them long-term damage.
But yes.
They did it at the time. Well, that's the rationale for not allowing steroids and the like, isn't it?
I suppose that's true. But if you could prove that the painkillers did actually have an actual physical long-term effect. It's a very interesting point you raise. Just like that one about Manchester United finishing outside the top four this year, presumably the defeat they're going to suffer at Britannia will be another nail in their coffin.
Wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't. What do you think, John Ashton?
I don't know.
Well, they don't have a bad record, Stoke. They've won three times against United in this fixture in the last 20 years. United have won four, but, seven games in the last 20 years, Stoke have won three of them, Barry. What's that tell you?
Well, I don't think Stoke will win. It's kind of the most interesting fixture of the weekend. Britannia Stadium is regarded as a bit of a fortress, and since the start of last season, I think Stoke have won 12, drawn 5, and lost 5.
Oof.
So, just off the top of my head, obviously, I'm not reading that off a piece of paper. Last season, they beat Villa, they beat Arsenal, they beat Liverpool, and they lost against Chelsea, lost against Manchester United. So, they could possibly get a draw, but to be honest, I think United would be too good for them.
Well, what's interesting also is that it looks like James Beattie and Ricardo Fuller are going to be out of that match. So, Tunshai is going to come in.
Oh.
And during the Carling Cup match this week against Blackpool, he showed the sort of vision and creativity that Stoke have lacked, and he was brought in presumably to give them that extra dimension so that they can move to the next level. So it looks like he'll probably start on Saturday.
Well, that's very interesting. Yeah, well, a nice Carling Cup reference there as well. Also in the Carling Cup, of course, Portsmouth got a win, a big win at Carlisle. Is this going to be the kind of corner turning moment in their season? They've got Everton at home this weekend, who put four past Hull. Excitingly enough, in the Carling Cup midweek. What do you think? Could this prove the spark to their season?
No, in a word. I think their problems run slightly deeper than a Carling Cup win away at a League One side.
Fat Captain posts in, he says, are Pompey down already? What's wrong with their tactics, or are their players just not good enough?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with their tactics, per se. I think his Paul Hart's problem is the fact that he's had to build a whole new team in about 2 weeks. I think their match against Bolton the other week featured only two players who played in the last match of last season, and some of his recent signings have been very good. Jamie O'Hara started his Portsmouth career brilliantly. He looks really energetic and creative in midfield, and again the Carling Cup this week gave us a chance to see Aruna Dindan in action. He's an excellent player, but over the last few years his career has been hampered by injury. If he can get back to what he was 2 years ago when he was banging in the goals in France and playing alongside Didier Drogba brilliantly for Ivory Coast, he could have a good effect.
In the meantime, though, Pompey to set a new record with a seventh straight defeat, do you think, this weekend?
Probably. It's hard to see them getting a win anywhere. I think their only hope for salvation lies with the fact that Sean Ingle has bet heavily on them to go down and finish bottom of the league. Shawnee, I don't know if anyone's been following him on Twitter, but he posts his tips up every Saturday, and they've become the laughing stock of the Twitter universe now, such is their lack of success. I think last Saturday he tipped Middlesbrough to beat West Brom, and before his tweet had even registered on the site, they were 3-0 down. So.
Surely he'll be back with us soon from his sabbatical in Berlin.
Yeah, I think he's back next week.
Exciting.
I fully expect him to be wearing sort of skin tight leather lederhosen and
no change there. Then,
big red ball and a strap in his mouth or something.
Yikes!
Sorry, just going to have to take a moment here. Listen, one other bit of Carling Cup. John, I know you went to see Arsenal beating, who was it they beat? West Brom?
West Brom. In a way, that's one of the good things about the Carling Cup is that, I went because...
Cheap tickets?
Well, exactly. Yeah. It sounds sort of slightly simplistic. But it does mean that fans who perhaps can't afford to go to the Premier League games or just simply can't get tickets for the big games
Or
journalists who haven't arranged a press ticket can go and take their girlfriend. The reason that I went, actually, was... with me and my other half are doing a thing at the moment called alphabet dating. Don't you, if you've heard it, where we take it in turns to arrange dates.
Is that like swinging?
No, we go, you know, this week was E, last week was D, and so it was my turn to arrange something. And so
it had to begin with E.
Emirates Stadium, that's where
right,
we
went. Right, and F's next. I can't imagine what
you're it's not up to me. It's her turn next week.
Right. Spurs
what did you do for A, B, C, and D?
A, we went to a play about Adolf Hitler. Right. That was mine. And then we went for a walk on Beachy Head. That was hers.
So your second date was suicide. We're off to commit joint suicide.
That was mine. That we had a Chinese. My creativity wasn't right. Up to much. And D was the Daredevil weekend that we had.
Quite happen that way. Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's fascinating. And this is a new craze sweeping.
I don't know if it's a new craze, but it's just something that I've been told that we're
doing. Oh, okay, nice one.
You've been going through a rough patch, and this is sort of a way to liven, put a spice back in your dreary relationship.
Producer Pete is waving at me because I think, you know, yeah. But that's really, and best of luck with, you know, whatever happens. this weekend, Spurs meanwhile had a 5-1 win at Preston North End with Peter Crouch, the hat trick, and a very nice back heel goal. There you go.
Just one small thing. I know your turn is G, so you could give her a night with Glenn Denning.
Right. Okay. Crazy golf. That's my suggestion. Right. Very good. In a second or two, we're going to be dialing up Dr. Sid and hearing about all sorts of things, including that Almeria sexual pulsation index, which I can't wait to hear about. So stay tuned.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Sid, are you there?
Oh, yeah. I'm here. Hello.
Ah, Sid. It's listeners. It's Sid Lowe in Spain.
Hello. What's that noise?
You should know, Sid. That's to make you feel
better. Brilliant. Fantastic. Just let me squeeze into these extremely tight trousers.
Sid, right, okay. So much to talk about. Sharks with laser beams suggest that Jimbo and Barry, he says, have you seen Zlatan Ibrahimovic play alongside Henry and Messi? I look forward to you publicly eating your words in your dismissal of his abilities as a striker. Sid, should we be consuming our judgments like so many sunflower seeds?
Not just yet, but there is a good chance that you might have to. Not just yet, because Barcelona, obviously, it's only 4 games into the season. They haven't played great sides, although, of course, they did completely dismiss Atletico Madrid at the weekend, beating them 5-2. But Zlatan's now scored in every one of the first 4 games of the season, which is a new Barcelona record for a new incoming player, something that Romario didn't do, Rivaldo didn't do, Ronaldo didn't do, even going right back into the 50s and 60s, no one did. So in that sense, yeah, you've got to eat your words. Also, he's playing very, very well. I thought, and I'll have to say against Inter Milan, that he looks slow and he slowed up Barcelona's attack. But there's no doubt that within the penalty area, he's got a phenomenal touch and he produced a brilliant, brilliant back-heel assist for a goal against Racing Santander on Tuesday night.
Sorry,
when,
Sid.
We had, yeah.
I saw him play in Champions League where he was pretty pathetic, so I won't be eating any words. We know he can perform in the domestic league.
Well, exactly. This is exactly my point about why you maybe shouldn't be eating your words just yet. Because, as I say, you know, against Inter Milan, I thought he was disappointing and didn't really suit Barcelona's style. But he has been fantastic in the Spanish League against clubs like Racing Santander. And it was a brilliant assist, the backheel. 4 or 5 players around him backheeled it into the path of PK. Yes, he's playing brilliantly. But, you know, as you say, we knew that, didn't we?
Now, Ibra, best ever start by a Barca new signing. Coincidentally, that fellow Cristiano Ronaldo's had the best ever start, am I right, by a Real Madrid player?
Yeah, in terms of goal scoring, he's now scored in every league game so far. That's 5 goals already this season, plus, of course, the 2 goals in the Champions League, which obviously isn't bad at all. Mm. And you add that to the fact that he's got 5 goals. Leo Messi has got 5 goals, and the Spanish press is now talking about it as a straightforward shoot-up between Messi and Ibrahimovic. Now, of course, it's completely forgotten, as is always the case, is the player that doesn't play for Barcelona or Real Madrid. That's David Villa, who's also got 5 goals. But Ronaldo's playing very, very well. Scored against at the weekend against Cadet after 47 seconds, as indeed I was talking to you from the stadium.
Yeah,
at the time.
Yeah.
And then this week against Villarreal, who are a proper side, even though they haven't won yet this season, scored after 1:47 with a very, very similar goal. Picked up just inside his own half, bombing down the left, cut inside. And a really nice finish. He is playing very well indeed.
Mm, very good. You were at the Hellas game, as you say. They then lost again at home to Deportivo this weekend. And you're suggesting that they are already looking doomed.
They are doomed. They are really doomed. Now, of course, you know, things happen. You never know. They could turn it around. But they've got all the ingredients to go down. The side that's scored two goals all season in four games. Now, that doesn't sound too bad, but both those goals were own goals.
Right.
They haven't yet scored at the other end. And they have the worst record, that means, of any of the big teams in Europe. I mean, at least Portsmouth have managed to score so far this season.
Mm.
And I was checking it out, and so have Grenoble, or however you say them in France, Grenoble, I imagine. And they look really poor. They just don't have any ingredients. Bear in mind, this is a club who brilliantly last season, their president was forced to resign after a drive-by shooting at a brothel.
He won't have his way into a brothel to go down this season. That's your
ba-dum.
Ba-dum. All right, well, listen.
Can I have that one for free?
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, in other Spanish news, Atletico Madrid are only one place above doomed Jerez, down in penultimate place in the Liga.
Yeah, two defeats, two draws so far. They were 2-1 up with barely a minute to go last night. They ended up drawing 2-2. The fans are going bonkers. Big signs that Abel Resina, the coach, might be replaced. If he wasn't to win at the weekend, they play against Valencia, and then they play a Porto in the Champions League in midweek of next week, then he could well be on the way out. Now, of course, the problem is that Atletico Madrid do this a lot, and they change coaches, and it's not really about the coaches. Abel Resina got them into the Champions League, just as Javier Aguirre had done the year before. They have far, far deeper problems than that, but they are on the verge of a genuinely proper crisis.
In the meantime, I've got a note here. It says, sexual pulsation index has confirmed that Almeria have the friskiest fans in La Liga. Don't disappoint us with this one, Sid.
This is absolutely true. It's a survey that's carried out every year, and as you say, it's the Sexual Pulsations Index, which I think is a brilliant title. And they're finding out who are the friskiest fans in Spain. Real Madrid would be down in 12th. I think Barcelona are 6th. And top of the table are Almeria, followed by Hebb. So they might be going down on the pitch, but they're not going there. One other team from down the south as well. I can't remember who it was, which suggests that football fans down the south are obviously that little more frisky, or it might suggest that they're just bigger liars.
Well, so you're saying they just go around and ask fans how often they do it, or what?
Basically, this is a poll involving male fans between the age of 19 and 35, I think it is. I think they have to be single, and it's talking about how often they're doing it, what's going
Why,
on.
Why, Sid? Why do they ask them this? What does it possibly mean for anyone?
Well, because someone loves to know these kind of things. We're talking about it.
When you said sexual pulsation, I thought there was something happening at the stadium. No, I'm disappointed by that.
No, unfortunately, they're not actually doing it in the stands.
Right,
obviously, it would take something special. Well, I suppose it wouldn't take something that special to do
right.
that.
Okay, excellent. Well, that's fantastic. And any big games this weekend we should know about?
Yeah, well, as I say, the really big one is that Valencia against Atletico Madrid, because Valencia are struggling as well. They were beaten by Getafe last night, beaten as well.
Mm.
And those are two clubs that are on the verge of a crisis, and two managers that could well be on the verge of the sack if things go wrong. So that is probably the pick of the games this weekend. Then the following weekend, you've got Real Madrid away at Seville, and at long, long last, we might have a game that Madrid could actually lose. I get a horrible feeling that the top of the table this year is already decided. It's Madrid and Barcelona, and it's going to be very dull.
Very, very good. Sid, thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll speak to you on Monday, if we may.
Yeah, I'll speak to you.
Lovely. Elsewhere in the world of Latin football, in Italy they had a full round of midweek fixtures, as you were saying. One game of that still to be played. Juventus, who were leading the league, are playing Thursday night against Genoa. A big game there. But in the meantime, Inter, by virtue of their 3-1 win over Napoli, they look magisterial once more, as they did in the derby, brushing away the southern team's chances in the opening minutes. A couple of goals there. They are now top of the table. Diego Milito, who can't get a call up for Argentina, has scored 5 goals in 5 games in Serie A and is looking very, very impressive. PF10 posting in saying, "Hey Jimbo, how long before Roberto Donadoni, former Italy manager, gets the sack at Napoli? I know it's still early, but they spent big on the likes of Cigarini, Quagliarella, etc., and the club hasn't improved at all. In fact, they're miles behind where they were this time last year." It's an issue that's mentioned almost every day with regard to Napoli, but I think the idea is that they're going to wait until the break in the championship at the start of October with the international weekend, and tirare le somme, you know, going to take stock. At that point, De Laurentiis, Aurelio De Laurentiis, the president, saying, "We can't change managers every 4 games," he says. So there you go. Donadoni's still in place at the moment, but they're not looking very good, Napoli. And indeed, they don't write down at the bottom of their table, aren't they? Where are they? They're just outside the relegation zone. Not very impressive. Elsewhere in Italy midweek, Barry, as you know, Sampdoria lost to Fiorentina.
Yes.
They did. I had a few quid on Sampdoria. I thought they'd win that one, but I was wrong.
Right.
And Milan lost against
Udinese. Well, indeed. The Sampdoria losing had a perfect record until that point, but Jovetic, the exciting young Montenegrin player, and the brilliant Sebastian Frey goal put paid to Samp's pretensions there. In a big week for Fiorentina, they were bouncing back from their defeat, a hideous defeat it was, to Roma on Sunday. We said this game was coming up when we were doing a live podcast on Sunday, and Roma were in all sorts of trouble. But despite it was a dismal game, really, the first half. I've seen it described as a spectacular Roma performance, but it started off awfully. And then as the goals started coming in, then you could see the confidence building and a bit of the old panache started to come back. They ended up 3-1 winners. And then Roma went down midweek to Palermo and in this completely waterlogged pitch took the lead twice. They were 1-0 up, then 2-1 up, and then Palermo were 3-2 up, and then Totti managed to, who had a brilliant game, managed to score the equaliser with a penalty in the last couple of minutes. So do seem to be some signs of positive reaction to the arrival of Ranieri at Roma. Of course, the other thing about the Sunday game when they beat Fiorentina was that after the game, Francesco Totti went up to the Curva Sud, where the Roma faithful hang out, and threw his jersey into the crowd. And they threw it back. Ooh. Francesco Totti's jersey thrown back by Roma fans, which has caused a lot of comment. And a couple of Roma ultras went on the radio, in fact, in the last couple of days, to explain that perhaps it's been overstated, this gesture. It wasn't specifically against Totti, because people were talking about the fact that Totti's been too close to Rossella Sensi, the woman who's the president of Roma, who the fans are very upset with, and also that Totti has just signed a new £100,000 a week salary, at a time when the club, the Sensi's, are £300 million in debt, not the best of ideas, particularly since he'll be about 43 by the time the contract actually ends. Anyway, there were suggestions that was behind the shirt throwing back business. Big shout out to Parma. We mentioned them last week. They're now up in fifth place, only goal difference keeping them out of the Champions League positions after beating Lazio 2-1. Over the weekend. First goal was scored when a Lazio player was down injured, so there was a bit of controversy there. But anyway, well done to Parma. Now, one or two... Oh, go on.
Sorry, just one. Can we do a very brief Sweden roundup?
Yeah, away you go.
Last night in Sweden, there was a match between IFK Gothenburg and Örebro, and it was disrupted in the first half when the referee discovered that the IFK goalkeeper, Mr. Kim Christensen, had moved... The goalposts. Yes.
No.
He had literally moved the goalposts. So the goalposts weren't stuck in the ground. They were sort of placed on the ground on a little square marking where each post should be. And before the game started, he was seen pushing them in. So he sort of made the goals about 8 to 10 inches narrower.
Right. And who spotted this?
Was it not the bars sticking out at the other end?
Yeah.
Well, no.
Probably they were, yeah.
Well, I suppose the bottom half of the goals were 8 inches narrow.
It was a trapezium shape.
Someone obviously brought this to the referee's attention anyway, and he stopped the game and went up and put them back out where they should have been and checked the other goals, which were fine. And so the game just continued as normal, and there's no word whether Christensen's going to be punished or not.
Well, you would hope so, because that's shocking business. Now, if you've got views on that or anything else you fancy, listeners, do send them in to us here at guardian.co.uk/footballweekly. As per usual, we'll be looking at one or two of your posts right after this. Posts, hey? Hello, Hungar, and happy birthday on the 4th of October. Let's see, lots of posts on the message. Well, that's a dangerous precedent I've just set there, isn't it? Dangerous. There's lots of posts reviewing our live antics last Sunday. We have a mixed response there. Mixed response, too, to Rob Smythe and his defending the added time antics in said live show. Oldest Code, does anyone remember the first time they thought, God, lummy, is this Rob Smythe character a United fan or what? Parker Boy says it was the time that he heard his Kent accent, which I think is a bit unfair. But anyway,
Rob's never made any secret of the fact that he's a United fan.
He certainly hasn't.
And some posters, I can't remember their name, but they said, journalists in the podcast should be objective. Why?
Right.
It would be very boring if we were all incredibly objective.
Wouldn't it, though?
Well, Rob is objective, in fairness. I think when he covers Man United, he is rarely... I didn't hear the podcast on Sunday, maybe an exception, but generally he's very balanced in his analysis.
Well, there you go. Get off my cloud on the subject of shirt sponsors, inappropriate shirt sponsors. Was some team not once sponsored by Jiffy's Condoms? Was it the Hammers in the 90s? Surely that is the worst ever. says, get off my cloud.
Doesn't ring any bells.
Does
that mean they weren't able to slip any past the goalie?
Yeah, very probably. Yeah, absolutely. St. Banjo says, way to mention the Sheffield Derby, which we did, but only in passing. Excellent game it was, he says, to rival the Manchester Derby on Sunday. But all of that was washed over by only mentioning the final score. Go on, then, let's give it a proper airing.
I don't know if I can actually, James.
Oh, did you not see it?
I didn't actually see it. I went out for dinner and only got it on sort of text and things.
What letter was that of the alphabet?
D. D for dinner. D.
All right. Okay, but you must have been delighted. Sheffield United.
Well, yeah, it was by all accounts a cracking game. United went 3-0 up in the first half, then tried their best to throw it away after the break once they came back to 3-2 and United were hanging on at the end.
Sounds extraordinary.
They tend to be quite tense affairs, and it's a big one for Kevin Blackwell, Sheffield United manager, who last season became the first United manager in 96 years, I think, to have the double, be managing United when the double was done over them by Wednesday. And it's obviously his first win in a derby as Sheffield United manager.
Yeah,
I read Mickey Gray, Sheffield Wednesday fullback Mickey Gray's BBC blog. He was very disappointed at the end of the game, but he said that a lot of fans had commented to him, fans from both sides, that the atmosphere afterwards was one of the most subdued ever after a Sheffield derby. So maybe, you know, neither team felt they'd done particularly well or done themselves justice in it.
Right. Now, beyond the Premier League, lots of exciting games come out this weekend. Ipswich, Newcastle.
Yeah, it's a big one with obviously the Bobby Robson connection.
Yeah.
Roy Keane, ex-Sunderland manager, taking his Ipswich side, Ipswich side hosting the old Sunderland rivals, Newcastle.
Still without a win, Ipswich, yeah?
Still without a win, Ipswich, yeah. They're having still having a nightmare time. I'll just rattle through a few others that are worthy of note.
Away, John.
It's the M180 Derby, Scunthorpe and Doncaster. Reading, Watford, Brendan Rodgers, his new side, Reading, who he left Watford for in the summer. And West Brom against Palace. West Brom, who are leading Palace, still in the bottom half, sort of slightly improved.
West Brom top of the Championship, Palace down at the bottom.
Yeah, they're not quite as far down as they were a week or two ago.
But this one's all about Neil Warnock.
Well, West Brom fans aren't mad keen on Neil Warnock after, of course, the Battle of Bramall Lane, famously in the years ago now. But it's that sort of thing still runs. And he's not very popular at many places, but right. West Brom, he gets a particularly warm welcome.
Yeah, indeed. The Battle of Bramall Lane, his most famous game, probably the time when he instructed basically his players to get
James. Right. It was the time when he was alleged to have instructed his players to have feigned injury and come off to in order to get the game abandoned, when he was entirely exonerated by the FA afterwards, and there were generally genuine injuries, and United lost the game 3-0 afterwards, so there was no underhand scheming.
Excellent. Delighted to know that. Sol Campbell, speaking of things in the lower or no longer in the lower leagues, Sol Campbell, who signed on a 5-year deal which would have been worth £10 million with League Two's Notts County, and after one game has now walked out again.
Yeah, you can sort of imagine him sitting in the Morecambe where Notts County lost at the weekend, sitting in their car park after the game, just thinking to himself, oh, this is shit, it really is. But there's various reasons that have been purported by a variety of newspapers that he wasn't happy with the other players that had been promised that they were going to bring in, and they hadn't, the future players that they were hoping to get, that he didn't expect them to arrive. He wasn't happy with the training facilities, didn't get on with the manager, who's Ian McParland, who's sort of a gruff Scotsman. I think the actual reason is probably somewhere in the middle of those things.
What exactly would he have been expecting?
What did he expect? I mean, I don't
£10 million over 5 years.
I'd be willing to put up with shabby training grounds and hard pitches for £10 million over 5 years.
I'll let them know, Barry.
It doesn't augur well for his managerial ambitions, because this was supposed to be a stepping stone into management, wasn't it? Because as well as this lucrative contract, there was a deal whereby he can become a coach as well at the club. And so this poor decision making doesn't reflect well on him.
Certainly doesn't. I tell you what, then, shall we round off today's pod with a quick look forward at the weekend's fixtures? And boy, there are some sizzlers out there. Oh, look, there's a little note here. 159 goals have been scored so far in the Premier League this season. That's an average of, as I'm sure you've already worked out, 2.84 per match. If this continues, this will be the highest scoring Premier League season of all time. There are people who suggest that's a bad thing. I'm personally happy to see lots of goals going in. But there you go. Where are we going to see the goals this weekend? Stoke Man United, we've already talked about that one. Birmingham Bolton,
Won't be there.
Yeah, won't be there. But Spurs Burnley, you can imagine.
Spurs Burnley, yeah. Definitely. That'd be quite interesting, actually, because Spurs have big problems at central back. In the Carling Cup during the week, they played Tom Huddleston there.
Yes.
And fast tracked Dawson back from injury. And of course, the Nuge is in prolific form, and this could be a chance for him to ram it down Harry Redknapp's throat.
Right down his throat.
Because he froze him out of things at Pompey.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a big, big grudge game, isn't it, for David Nugent?
That's as big as Spurs Burnley can get.
Full striker. That's fascinating. There you go. Fulham Arsenal. This was the game that Arsenal lost in disastrous fashion. Like, it was only 1-0, I think, or 2-1 or something, but they just looked woeful, didn't they? It was the start of last season, wasn't it?
Yeah, I vaguely remember that.
Okay, and Fulham are off to a rotten start, really.
Yeah, they are. They're not playing with the vigour they had last season. That was the hallmark of their victory over Arsenal last season. Actually, Arsenal were just outfought on that day. I mean, Fulham are a tidy team, obviously, but it was their superior combativity that got them the win that day. But I don't know if it's because of their Europa League exertions or what, but they haven't been quite as dynamic this year so far.
Right. Now, Portsmouth, Everton, we talked about that already. On Sunday, Sunderland play Wolves. Man City on Monday night host West Ham in what could be a very interesting game.
How will Mick McCarthy be received back at Sunderland, do you think?
I'd say he'd be received well. I don't think, and I could be wide of the mark here, but I don't think there's any animosity towards him because his hands were somewhat tied when he got sacked. I mean, he had 50p to spend on new players with a championship team in the Premiership. There was very, very little he could do. So I don't think he'll be booed or heckled or anything. I kind of think everyone likes Mick McCarthy anyway. His interviews are always very forthright and quite funny. And, you know, he was asked last night, Sylvain Ebanks-Blake, it was his first time back at Old Trafford since being released as a kid. And I must be honest, I didn't even know he'd been at Old Trafford. And the reporter, in a bid to drum up a bit of interest in the game, that was so interesting I ended up watching Midsummer Murders instead. But said, you know, has Sylvain Ebanks-Blake been, you know, showing, champing at the bit ahead of this game because it's his big chance to show Alex Ferguson he made a terrible mistake? And McCarthy was just like, looked at him as if he was some sort of idiot. And went, no, right. not in the slightest.
Mick McCarthy looked at me once as if I was some sort of idiot, would you believe? Before Ireland played.
None of us can believe that. We're all sharing looks.
Well, and then he made me behave like an idiot, which you might find even harder to believe.
Right.
It was before Ireland played Holland in Amsterdam in, was it 2000? I can't remember. But I was over there as a journalist in a hastily arranged trip, so I wasn't given any of the details of when the press conference would be and all that sort of thing. But I found out that Ireland were to train in the Amsterdam Arena on the Friday night. So I went along there, the game being on a Saturday. So I went along and everything was closed. So I scaled the wall and got in. And it turned out to be a closed doors training session. No media were supposed to be there.
Hence the closed doors.
Yeah. Well, I thought I was just late and they closed it. But I jumped over. And so Mick was very angry to see me. And so but he was being a decent man. He didn't actually throw me out. He said I had to sit in the dugout of the Amsterdam Arena, but face the other way. And every time I tried to spin my head around, he's like, "Hey, look at that way."
Wow! So, how long was the training session, Paul?
Well, I was late as it turned out, so I got about half an hour of that.
Wow, that must be dope.
It was great.
My word. Okay, listen, well, there's just two other things then to finish off our previews. Liverpool, who we've just had official confirmation they're not allowed to spend much money on players.
I wonder if Liverpool didn't goof in, just given their recent defensive problems, particularly from set pieces, did they get rid of Sammy Hupia a bit too early? Because I know he's been doing well in Germany for Leverkusen, and even he's still playing for Finland even.
Right.
And this guy, Kyriakos, doesn't look like much of a replacement. So Hupia, for example, against Hull at the weekend, would be the perfect man to bring in, because next week Liverpool have the Champions League.
To be honest, against Hull, Barry would be the perfect man to bring in. Okay, but they could equally have made a move for Richard Dunn, he said, segueing brilliantly onto Just So 007's post. I sat at Villa Park on Saturday. I gasped that we have a centre-back who can pass the ball. Stand up, James Collins, he says, referencing a different player to the one I talked about. You have exceeded my expectations already. Also, City fans, Julian Lescott must be a hell of a player to let Dunn go. Thanks anyway. Terrific stuff. And they're at Blackburn, where you have to feel they stand a decent chance of continuing that streak. Well, there you go. That is it for today's Football Weekly Extra. Many, many thanks, Paul Doyle, Barry Glendinning and John Ashton for joining us. And producer Pete for helming the entire thing. We'll be back on Monday. So do enjoy your weekend of footballing fun. And we'll see you then.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.